This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me now in the studio is San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz Jones. We're going to be talking about what she is looking at, what her concerns are for free bus fare. Also, we've just learned about the death of a San Antonio resident, Ruben Ray Martinez. He had an encounter with Homeland Security about a year ago. He did not survive that encounter, and there has been a lot of darkness about why didn't we find out about this earlier and other issues. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Mayor Jones, you're in the studio, as we heard from all of our callers, talking about free fare for bus rides, and they were in favor of it. So what is your proposal?
Yeah, well, and for actually for many of the reasons, whether it be, Kamala or some of the other folks that chimed in, I think that's worth us having some data to understand what this might look like in our community. So let me also just back up, because this was not, you know, my idea solely. I appreciate the leadership, the advocacy of Councilman Mickey Rodriguez, who brought this up actually a couple of years ago, different administration. Councilman Galvan tried to revive it, and unfortunately his effort stalled. But again, I think this is worth exploring. So I resuscitated it and, yes, took the opportunity to ask VIA to provide us some information about what a pilot might look like as we explore fare-free. I would push back just a little bit. There was the first, I think it was David, actually, the first caller that talked about, you know, this would help average folks. Actually, I don't think so. I think this would, in large part, help the most cost burdened in our community. And those are not average folks. I think we know the people that ride the bus today largely have to, out of necessity. So we are, in fact, would be helping the most cost burdened in our community. So what I asked VIA to help us understand, help the council understand, is if we wanted to do a pilot, right, help us understand what that might look like. So let's look at the top five routes. And in looking at the data, 25% of VIA's ridership utilize five routes, right? So let's look at that. That's a really good sample. And I can appreciate, some folks wanting to look at just seniors or just students. But I think if you look at like absolute numbers of riders, you're going to get a really rich amount of feedback in terms of who all you're helping with this. So that's why I wanted to really focus on absolute numbers of riders. And let's make sure that we get as good of a feedback as possible. So my ask was, if we wanted to do a 6-month pilot, that aimed for a start date of July 1st and focused just on those top five routes, which, again, are responsible for 25% of VIA's riders, what would your plan look like? That was one. The second ask in my letter to the VIA CEO was, identify your top five concerns as it relates to implementing that pilot, as well as your top five proposals to mitigate those concerns. And then my last ask was, since fares only make up 5% of VIA's operating budget, tell me how you would, give us some ideas on how you would offset that if you needed to, right? And if they, that's about, as mentioned, $18 million. And if they only had to offset 3%, if the council agreed to give them the telecom tax, how would they offset that 3%? And oh, by the way, none of your offsets can in any way impact the operational timelines of the Green Line or the Silver Line. Those kind of, for me, are the sacred cows, right? So those are the three asks. I asked for that February 11th, and I asked for a written response to the council by March 11th, so we can have a discussion on the council about what that might look like. As one of the folks that called in mentioned, this helps with traffic. This helps with less cars on the road. That means, frankly, less emissions. What's one of the number one reasons why kids in our community miss school? Asthma attacks. And so if we can help ourselves locally with decreasing emissions, unfortunately, as the federal government is rolling back many of these protections for air quality, then I think it's important that we do that. I think what's also important when we look at ways in which this can actually help generate revenue, if you've got more people riding the bus, you know what that means? You've got more eyeballs on that bus, in that bus, which makes advertising revenue potentially much higher than it currently is. So in my mind, I don't think you should assume that an increase in advertising revenue won't in fact actually help offset some of the fares that we would no longer take in. Part of the other reason this was motivating for me is, you know, I live along the Green Line. And so there was a coupon that I received in the mail that said, hey, we've got from VIA that said, hey, we're running this pilot and utilize this coupon as much as you want in the month of February. And when I asked that to the VIA team when they came to council, I said, now, are you all tracking this? Like, if I were to ride the bus, you know, 2 times or 200 times or 2,000 times, you actually don't know how much money you're foregoing as a result of me utilizing this. So all that to say, you know, we have an opportunity to get good data. I think there are lots of reasons why this would be beneficial to our community, but in particular to our most vulnerable, which is why it's worth exploring. I was just in Los Angeles at the U.S. Conference of Mayors leadership meeting, and I spoke there with the mayor of Tucson. They implement a fare-free bus program on top of, you know, some of the other concerns, as it sounds like, as some bus riders have mentioned, and as John Gary pointed out, there are already practices in place that allow the operators to deny service to somebody that would cause, let's just say, an unpleasant experience for other riders. So there are already those practices in place. I understand there may need to be other things. I think it's really important that we do hear from the Transit Workers Union on this. I had a conversation myself with Mr. Garza, the president of that, and I said, look, you're an important stakeholder. I also welcome your top five concerns as it relates to this pilot and your top five recommendations to mitigate those. And let's work on this together. It's not us versus them, right? The problem that we should all be focused on is how do we get people faster to where they need to go? How do we help the most vulnerable? And how do we ensure that that is a safe experience for everybody?
We got a caller holding on, William. And William, you're on the air.
Hi. Just wanted to say, first off, Ms. Ortiz, so happy to have somebody like you in politics who gives hope, you know, back to a lot of my generation that, you know, politics isn't just a zero-sum game and it is about protecting people. I just like to say also, you know, it seems like this is indicative of a much larger problem in the United States and possibly even the world today, where all of a sudden, poverty is like the enemy, and I don't understand it. I always was taught that strength is about lifting up the people around you, and I thought that was what America was about. And it is very disheartening to hear that people, their concerns are, what if the homeless use buses? There's no problem with that. What if they need to get to shelters? Everybody here is an American citizen. We're all human. And I think that the bottom line is we need to remember that. We're all human.
Well, William, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Can I get your reaction, Mayor Jones?
Look, I mean, for me, this has always been about how do we help people? And let's, we do big things as a city. When we want to do big things, we do big things, right? When you want to knock down the Institute of Texan Cultures in like 85 seconds, we did that.
Or the Soapworks apartments. Yeah. They're now gone. I went there like one day to the next. Where'd they go?
That's right. When we want to do big things, we do them. We move fast. We move aggressively. We find a way. And so I think we can take that same approach to helping the most vulnerable in our community.
So the $18 million that we're being told, annual loss, so it's not a one-time cost, it's annual. Do you see that as a barrier, or can that be money come from elsewhere or savings elsewhere? Or what do you see?
So $18 million, just for everyone's context, $18 million reflects 5% of VIA's budget, just 5%. Okay. And I think, as I mentioned, when we look at the potential ways in which fare-free could mean increased ridership, which means increased advertising opportunities, you may actually see that be a much, much smaller gap. The other piece that could contribute to that being smaller is if the city council approves giving the telecom tax to VIA. In speaking with the VIA president, VIA president CEO, San Antonio is the only major city in Texas that doesn't provide that telecom tax to their public transit, right? And so they could get that full amount, right, as a result of the sales tax. But either way, this is a relatively, again, in their whole budget, a relatively small amount of money that, if we are creative, can be offset by other increases in revenue as a result of a fare free program.
Cities that have tried this, like Chapel Hill and Tucson, Santa Fe, they see almost a doubling of ridership. And I've heard that as a complaint, saying, well, then too many people would ride the bus if you made it fare free. And it's like, wait, do you even hear the words coming out of your own mouth?
In fact, right? Like, wow, if you made that is kind of silly, because at the end of the day, I mean, people are riding the bus not to ride the bus. They're riding the bus to get to work. They're riding the bus to get to their health appointment or doctor's appointment or get to school, right? More people getting to where they need to be and contributing to our economy is a good thing.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back more with Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones. Phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. I don't want to talk about this, but I have to. It's about the thing that went on today at City Council, vote about, they had a discussion behind closed doors about censure for you. I got to talk about it. So anyway, that's going to be coming up here on The Source. Stay with us.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
It's one thing to love public radio, but it's a special thing to support it. Consider this. If you've got a car you don't need anymore, or you've got one that's simply too expensive to repair, arrange to donate it to TPR. It's easy for you, pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thanks in advance. Here's how to get started. Go to tpr.careasy.org to learn more.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies in the studio with Gina Ortiz-Jones, San Antonio Mayor. We're going to ask you about this censure situation at City Council, but I do want to put the question out for our listeners. Do you think this is how City Council should be spending their time? What do you think about the censure? They had a meeting today about it. Apparently, they're going to have a vote on Friday about whether or not to do the censure. So I'd like to hear what listeners got to say about it, because there's a lot going on in San Antonio. This does not solve problems, I don't think. But so Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones, can you give your reaction to the fact that they had the meeting today, executive session behind closed doors? They will be meeting on Friday to cast a vote.
Well, let me back up a little bit, right, to how we got here, what happened on February 5th. February 5th, we were going to have a discussion on council about the future of the Bonham, right, essentially, because there had been an update in fire code. And unfortunately, as of that point, the Bonham was the Bonham Exchange, LGBTQ Club, Historical. They were the only one in the entire city, and if that moved forward, would have been the only club in the entire state that was not meeting fire code. And so, look, how I grew up and the professional experiences that I have had, I take our responsibilities with public safety, preservation of life, minimizing risk. I take all of that very, very seriously. And so as we were getting closer to the deadline for that, because I was very clear with the city staff, I was not going to support an extension of any kind. Folks had since 2018 to get where they needed to be. They had the Bonham, for their own reasons, they can explain that, had taken no steps, zero steps to get into compliance with fire code. And as somebody that has spent time there, and as frankly somebody that also understands that if there were a fire that were to happen there, it would be disproportionately LGBTQ people that would, in fact, you know, be hurt there. And so I was tracking this closely because I know it is a historical site, and I know that that is a safe space that certainly my community needs now, frankly, more than ever, given all that's happening in the political climate. So as we approach the deadline, and unfortunately, the Bonham Exchange had not reached an agreement with the city to reduce their occupancy, which is what the fire chief was requesting in order for it to stay open, I reached out to the owner myself and I said, Joan, this is what I think we need to do. One, it's got to be safe. There is no path forward for me if you don't reduce occupancy. You have to keep this place safe. That's the only thing that's going to keep it open. And oh, by the way, I will personally help you raise the money to put in that sprinkler system. So that's what I offered. And Councilwoman Kaur offered something else, which was, frankly, more time to just stay open, and would not have changed the occupancy at all, which would have been contrary to the recommendations of the fire chief. And so, again, I reached out to the owner of the Bonham the night before that vote, and I just reiterated because I had seen the slide deck that we were going to show, and you know, when the fire chief calls the Bonham Exchange a fire trap, when she points to lots of examples of how of clubs that have been not in compliance and the loss of life as a result of that, she was also going to point to all of the times that the city had tried to engage with the Bonham Exchange to include signed documents by the current owner, Ms. Duckworth, about steps she was going to take that, in fact, have never been taken. They were going to show all of that. And I wanted to avoid that and put in place a process that would have kept the Bonham open and safe and on a path to getting sprinklers. The other option put forward by one of my colleagues would have just kept it open, would not have reduced occupancy, and would have, I think, made them more susceptible to predatory developers. And that isn't that. So that's the backstop. That's the backstory.
Sure. But that's not the issue. Isn't the issue about how you handled it?
Well, so this is, I mean, I'm getting there. But I think all that is important because what we were trying to do is keep it open, safe, and on a path to sprinklers. One option, my option, did that. The other one did not and would have been contrary to what the fire chief said we needed to do. And so that morning before the vote, we're getting closer, and come to find out the deal that I had offered to Ms. Duckworth, she actually had not shared with her lawyers. And so then we were trying to figure out what was going on there. The lawyers became aware of it, were very favorable to that option, which is, again, reduce occupancy, and I commit to help raising. That was a deal then that was shared with my colleague, Councilwoman Kaur, who did not support that and so essentially killed the deal. I, again, wanting last-ditch effort, let's avoid this all going public and let's keep this place open, because it wasn't clear to me that my other colleagues were also going to support that amendment, which would have meant that evening you would have shut down the Bonham Exchange. So, you know, I reiterate my concerns to Councilwoman Kaur, and was my voice elevated? Yes. Did I drop an F-bomb? Yes. Did I point to locations? Yes. I admit to doing all of those things. I in no way personally berated her. I did not use derogatory language. I did not do those things. We were talking about public safety and, in fact, the consequences to our community and public safety if the things moved forward in a way that were contrary to the recommendations of the fire chief. So, again, that's the focus. And look, at the end of the day, I think we got to a good outcome, which is the bottom is reduced occupancy, you're meeting fire code, and we're on a path to raise resources for a sprinkler system. So it was
You're going after you mm-hmm. over your demeanor mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know.
Well, I just said what I did. So I've already, you know, and again, this for me, this is never personal. It's always about progress. And in this instance, it was about public safety. So I admit to raising my voice because we were about to do something needless, which is no, oh, by the way, embarrass Ms. Duckworth, and oh, by the way, go against the wishes of the fire chief. Some were willing to vote on that. In my mind also, I think that would have raised eyebrows in our community about how this council takes seriously public safety if you are willing to go against the recommendations of the fire chief. So I was trying to literally avoid all of that and put them on a good path.
Sure, you did that.
Well, and that's the thing, though.
But now you're dealing with the censure situation, yeah. And the concern might be that this could sour relationships on city council, and it could hinder progress on really things we got to get done.
Well, I think we have to get – well, part of us getting things done, I think, is the public trusting how we view public safety. Right. I think that also has to do with, you know, ensuring that we are, in fact, keeping places safe as much as possible. So I think there's a lot of things that we can work on. And I am, frankly, very proud of some of the work that we just did this week. A week and a half, just had a roundtable with Councilman Galvan on how we can increase and improve child care, early childhood education in our community. I'm working with Councilman Munguia on increasing housing supply options for communities that have traditionally not been at the table. So I agree with you. There's a lot of things that we can do. And if we focus on the progress, and I think unless mm-hmm. on the personal stuff, then I think we'll be in a good spot. And I certainly commit to doing that.
I see that. Let me go to a caller. We have Blake. And let's get Blake on the air. And Blake, we're short on time, but you're on the air.
Okay, David. I just think that our mayor, she's human. And I know that some people are passionate at times and have a tendency to voice things in a little more harsh manner, but just take a less browbeating approach to situations. And we don't need to waste time on voting as to whether or not she should be reprimanded for saying something that most people find grossly abrasive. But just change her approach a bit and be less abrasive. That's all I think.
All right. Well, Blake, thank you for your call. And so, Mayor Jones, we got about a minute and a half left. You want to? Any lessons learned from all this, or can you, what Blake said?
Well, you know, I think that we are all coming to this with a different set of personal and professional experiences and expectations about, you know, what we're going to prioritize. I will always prioritize public safety. I will prioritize the people's work. I certainly want to continue to work with my colleagues on things that best serve our city.
So do you think this is something that once, I don't know what the vote's going to be or all this stuff, having this meeting and executive session today and now another vote. And do you think this was all unnecessary? This could have been done differently?
I certainly wish we were not talking about this. And I certainly wish that we were spending a lot more time on things like our community benefits agreement, which essentially gets our community 156 speed bumps a year.
All right. Well, Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones, thanks so much for coming in here today. We didn't get to all the topics, a lot of those things to talk about. So look forward to having you back in the studio soon. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.